Oh, I'm gonna have to move.
What's going on here? Right, man. That's base. Amud Aleph, Masechta Rosh Hashanah. Last week we discussed that there are different kinds of Rosh Hashanah. There are different times, there are different events, there are different ways of identifying new years within Halacha. The concept is not unfamiliar to us because we know that we count the Jewish years from the order of the months come from Nisan, right? We know that non-Jewish years from January. It's the idea of having counting for different situations. Use a different count is not foreign to us. We sign our checks with the secular year. And in fact, that is a discussion that we'll get into this soon. We'll get into that. With a question that's raised by the Rishonim, where there's a mitzvah dafkid account, and whether one can use the non-Jewish dates. But the concept of having different years, we have fiscal years, and we have tax years. The concept is not a strange concept to us. We pointed out last week is that there are different kinds of years. There are years for the halacha of Baal Ta'acher. There are years for the purpose of dating. There are years for the purpose of grouping things together, which are the basis of which is the pool from which one takes Trumas and Maestras. We raised two interesting questions about the year of the Shana Rishona. Is that a 12-month year? We know Bar Mitzvah is a 12-month year from the time that the child is born, and the Shana Rishona is a 12-month year or a 13-month year. I guess it was a leap year from the time they get married. But that those are situations where the halacha uses the natural date to begin the year, and those become the rarity. When it comes to orla, the 3 years of a plant, so we don't use the date that it was born. We say there are orla years. So when it hits the Rosh Hashanah for orla, Tishrei, then it could be 3 months, it could be 1 day. That becomes a year. The first idea of the Mishnah is that there are different kinds of years. There are situations where a year is defined. Shemitah, Yovel is defined. And the first entry that we discussed is Rosh Hashanah Lishonim, or Rosh Hashanah Limlochim. That Tishrei is the Rosh Hashanah for the counting of the years of the kings. And that's going to be the Jewish kings. And Nisan will be the years of the non-Jewish kings. Now, why do we have to count kings? So that's what we discussed last week, because the practice in the time of the Mishnah, the Gemara, was to date documents in based on the how long the king had been in reign. So it was the Tishrei, or there was the Kislev of the third year or the fourth year of the king. And it was a Nisan of the fifth year of the king, the fifth Nisan, the sixth Nisan, right? We won't count years to Corona, right? We're not going to have Mitzvah. We won't have to say this is the first Purim, the second Purim, right? But that's the concept. The concept is that they would count. This is the Shlom HaMelech's third Nisan, Shlom HaMelech's fifth Yom Tov Sukkos. So count the dates by using the king's years. Now the Gemara says that if there wasn't a convention in place, so that means that everyone has to know when this particular king, when Yehoyakim, and Yehoshaphat, when it's Sidkiah, and when Yerubbaal, when did they become kings? Because if we would not know when they became kings, so then we could end up saying this was the Kislev of the Kislev of the third year of Shlomo Melech. We don't know whether that was before or after the Nisan of the first year of Shlomo Melech. You have to remember, when did Shlomo become king? Did he become king in Tishrei? In Cheshvan, become king in Adar. So we could have a document we can have two documents and we won't know which is first, which is second. Or even more problematic, the sofer won't write the correct date. Now, the Tosfos does, the big Tosfos in Beis Menachem does raise a question, is that really reasonable to say that people who write documents, that the lawyers who write documents, they do this all the time as a profession? So that's what a lawyer, that's why Tosfos is skeptical about Rashi's example. And Tosfos says there's a different situation where if you came, they're presenting a document that they could end up presenting a document to be dated earlier than it really was. All right, that's what we call a shtar muktam, a document that is predated. And the halacha is a document that's predated is not a fully functioning document, maybe a puzzle document. What's the problem with a predated document? Because the halacha says that when I borrow money with a document, that creates an implicit lien against the property of the debtor. A document, if I borrow money without documentation, it does not create a lien. When I borrow money without documentation, so then he owes me the money. If I have two Adam, he owes me the money. And I'll bring the two Adam. There's no question. But if I have a document, that is a lien without any further stipulation. It creates a lien on its own. Now, the Gemara says that what's the basis for that? A loan is a loan is a loan. Your property should be tethered to the money that you owe me. So why is it that the property is only, let me be a little bit more specific, why is it that it only becomes a lien if there's a document? Because the purpose of a lien is that if the person sells his property, I can still go after the property. If Reuven sells the house and I have a lien against that, I can still get the house. If Reuven sells his car, then I can't go after the car. So that's why the Gemara refers to real estate is called the chosem sheyesh lanachrayus, property that carries responsibility with it. It's called mishugodim, property that can be tethered, and it can be tethered to my loan no matter how many times it gets sold. Non-real estate is called metaltlin, right? Stuff which moves around. It means I can't tie it down. It's not mishu, it's called b'nei charmin free. But it's very interesting. In modern Hebrew, a real estate is called, I think, nadlan. I think a person in real estate is called a nadlan. People don't even know where it comes from. It comes from the Rosh Tevis of nechosim and nadlan and nechosim deloy. Something like that, yeah. Forget it. The chosim dil loy naidi. The property that does not move. You look up in modern Hebrew. So a nadlan is a real estate broker, because and it's that shows the precious of Hebrew that it. Every Israeli, you can explain to them the concept in halacha. Nichse dil loy naidi, immovable property, because land, the house, wherever it goes, I can still have a lien against it. So that is, now how do I have a lien? Because I have a document. Now, if my document is predated, then I'm going to be able to grab land that I should not be grabbing. Let's explain a little bit better. Why did Chazal man document law? That's because when I buy a house, so a lien investigation, a title search, right? So in the Gemara's time, it's true to some extent today as well, but the Gemara's time, if I borrowed money and there was no documentation, then if I bought a house from a person who had an undocumented loan, so I could not be expected to know about that non-documented loan. Right? If a person had a documented loan, so documents in the time of Gemara were well known, apparently. It's hard for us to appreciate because we have documents all over the place. But the Gemara's time, that when people made a document, they had Edom, and apparently it was a big thing. It was an event. It's hard for us to appreciate that. So if I documented the loan, people knew about it. And therefore, when I sold my house to somebody, that person's expected that with minimal research against it. However, if it's a non-documented loan, that's a non-event. That just took place in somebody's living room. No one knows about it. So now when I buy the house, I cannot be expected to know there's a lien against it. So now somebody comes knocking on my door and says, you bought this house last year. I borrowed money from this guy 3 years ago. So I'm collecting from the house. So if there was no documentation, the Gemara says, no way. He can't get the house from me. Why? Because when I bought the house, there's no way that this loan is going to show up in a title search. So therefore, the deal of the sale was, as far as I know, it is a property that's clean of any liens. It's clean of any kind of, it's as far as I know. So therefore, I cannot be now, you can't collect this house from me. However, if there was a documented loan, that means that when I bought this house, with a little bit of a title search, I could have found out that this person lent this money. So therefore, the fact that that information is so accessible, it's expected of me to know that. So when I bought that house, I have to know that there's a lien against it. And then the person can come with this document and say, he's taking the house away from me. And that would be respected. So now the Gemara says, and now the dating of a loan, the dating of a document becomes so important, because when a person to collect the house and he says, you bought this house in 2015 and I had a loan against this in 2014, so I'm fried, I'm done, right? Now, if he doesn't have a doc, if there's no date in the document, I would say, maybe it was 2000. Maybe he borrowed me to the 17th, 18th. Maybe this property wasn't even owned by the debtor when he borrowed the loan. Now, what happens? The person comes to me and he predates the document. He borrows money, and he borrows money in 2016. He says, let's go into the back room and write 2014. Now he sells the prop. Now. He sold the property in 2015, right? He borrows money 2016. Now they make a deal and they predate the loan to 2014. Now he comes with his document and says, yes, so sue the lawyer to the title search. Go after him. But this house is my house because I had a lien in 2014. So that's why a predated document is a postal document. And the very last line of the Gemara of Tosfos says, "The end of Ezer Neshech Perish Bakuntris Pesul Lagabi Mishabde Avol Bimnei Chorei Gavi V'lo Yitachin." Rashi says that a predated document is a worthless document, and you cannot use it to collect a house or property. It's useless as verifying a lien. But you can use it to collect money. And Tosfos says wrong. Chazal created a penalty. That if a person predates a loan, the loan is worthless. The document is worthless. So now he can't even collect his debt. Right? So when we made this deal and we predated the document in 2014, the halacha of Rashi would say the document still works, I can still use this document. If it's ever shown that I predated it, Rashi says I cannot collect any property, even the property that was sold after the loan. Doesn't matter, because it's a worthless document, but it still proves that the guy owes me money. And Tosfos says, no, we made a penalty. Then now the document is absolutely no respect. for me to make the deal. It's also for us to negotiate interest. It was also for anybody to sign on that document. It was also to write the document. Chazal are very mach when it comes to rivis. And Taisva says, and the document is worthless. The document cannot be used. So Taisva said, Chazal made a rule that if a document has an Easter inside of it and says you're going to collect interest, that document becomes worthless. In other words, somebody comes to me and it takes me to court and says, I owe him $20,000. And he pulls out a document that says that it's $20,000 plus interest. So I'll turn to the court and say, the Dayanim, and say, this is not a good document. This is not a good shtar. Because the shtar has an Easter de rice inside of it. It's worthless. So I can walk away and say, everybody sent from me. He has to bring Adam. He can find other ways of proving it. It doesn't make me a tzaddik. It just means that the document is a... So Taisva says, just like that document is a worthless piece of paper, so a document that is predated, even if it's predated unintentionally. But once a document can be used inappropriately, so Taisva says the entire document is worthless. And Rashi says, no. A document that was done by Isur, that contains the Isur of Ribbis, that's a worthless document. A document that contains something that's wrong, and a person could use it inappropriately, so that document can't be used in the entire, to collect from Mishubah. Then we can't give him the possibility of doing something wrong, but the document as a document is acceptable. So our Gemara says that we have to have a convention so that people can document, people can a convention that people can easily document loans, and the documentation can be something that's well understood. So if we try to be so precise, the king became a king in Kislev. And now every single Kislev is going to be the when we celebrate the king, it'll be year one, year two, year three, year four. So then we're going to have to remember now if year to be three, four, be 20 years later, who's going to remember that the king, he became king in Kislev? But if we say that the year of every king begins in Tishrei, so now we'll know that Cheshvan is after Tishrei, Kislev is after Cheshvan, and we'll be able to maintain the dates of the document. That's the Gemara that we discussed last week. It comes up halacha lamasa. Halacha lamasa comes up, God forbid, a person wants to pre-date a loan, but it comes up at weddings. Very often, I have the practice of, especially in winter, right, in the winter. No, it's usually in the spring and in the fall when the Chosin's Tish would take place before Shkia and the wedding takes place after Shkia. So halachically, they take place on different days. So here you're by the Chosin's Tish and you're doing the Ksuba. So the Ksuba says they get married on, let's say today. Today was a Monday. So the Chosin's Tish, if it was before, when it was Shkia, let's say around 6 o'clock or so, 6:10. So then it was Monday. If the wedding takes place now, so then the wedding's Tuesday. What date do you put on the Ksuba? Do you put Monday or Tuesday? So one easy solution would be put Tuesday. Because if you post-date a document, you're making your position weaker. You can do that. If you post-date a document, that cannot lead. If you post-date a document, you can make the document hold its position weaker. All right? He accepts that. But you will not be able to get any property inappropriately. So one solution is just post-date it. Right? When I was a kid, very often, we would wait a very long time for chuppas. I remember often waiting. Why are we waiting? Because we want to make sure we don't assign the ksuva on a different date than the wedding. Nowadays, in my adult life, I remember this is not acceptable practice to have these long breaks. But as a kid, I remember, and I believe that probably in Hasidic circles, they also would have these long breaks. But Nowadays, things are much more scheduled. I don't know exactly what so people don't have the same tolerance or time. I mean, it's a wedding easily, so maybe people are less tolerant of having long, of getting there for a chos decision, having to wait from Shkia till Tzeis, a 45-minute break, and then only after Tzeis are we going to do the ksuva, so that we're going to have the chuppah afterward. But they didn't want to have a different day. So one of the solutions to this problem is just post-date the ksuva, because number one, the kinyan is usually done by the chos decision. So the kinyan is when you commit yourself to the ksuva, when you take the handkerchief. So you're committing yourself on Monday, but you're actually post-dating it for Tuesday. So even though it just weakens the document, but it's what we call a nechzei keshikra. You're signing something that's incorrect in a document. So we don't like doing incorrect stuff in a document, especially a ksuva, because a ksuva is like a Klal Yisrael document. Now, there are certain documents that are totally private, but a ksuva is seen as having the imprimatur of a beis din, because the beis din made the document. There's no negotiation in the ksuva. It's all preset. So for Klal Yisrael's document to be inaccurate, we don't like that. So that's a reason why we don't like doing the post date. So what's the other option? You can't put today's date. What are we making the kinyan? So at the end of the day, that would be acceptable because the kinyan was done today. However, Rav Moshe thought it was wrong. Rav Moshe wrote two brief shuvas he thinks is possible. Why? Because he says, because we all know that the ksuva is that no one wants to commit the ksuva unless they get married. So we all know that they're holding by the chosen tish. No one's making commitment now if they don't go through the wedding. If something happens between the chosen tish and the wedding, so everybody says no one wants to make that commitment. So when we all know that the kinyan is really taking place tomorrow, so then by putting today's date, it does become a shtar muktam. To put tomorrow's date doesn't look right. To put today's date, Rav Moshe writes, incorrect, because everybody around the table knows it's not chal till tomorrow. And Rav Moshe very strongly, he held the shah that was possible. Now Rav Moshe is a das yachid in this issue, to go so far. But to have a posel ksuva is a big problem, because the Gemara says that a husband and wife should not live together with a posel without a ksuva. So it's one thing to say Rav Moshe is a das yachid on something which affects you for one moment. But then to live at Meir Esim Shana with Rav Moshe saying, you have a posel ksuva, Not so comfortable for the Masada Kiddush. And then Rav Mazalman says was also against it, for an entirely different reason. Because in the ksuv it says that the chosen is going to ask the wife, the woman to be his wife. And they do a kinyan. So Rav Mazalman says, very much sounds like a shtar kiddushin. Shtar kiddushin, because you can get married with a document. So he says, when you look at this, the guy is signing a document, says he's going to get married to this woman. The rabbi is saying, I represent the kala. It looks like a shtar kiddushin. So if and it says, we're getting married today. Now, if we actually get married today, now here, Rav Zalman's very cryptic about this, so I'm now embellishing, and I think what he's saying. If we end up getting married today, so then it's clear that we're talking about the giving of the ring later on. But if I have a document that says I'm getting married on Monday and I end up getting married on Tuesday, so Shlomo Zalman said, maybe that document became a shtar kiddushin and we got married already and we shouldn't be making a bracha later on. Also a das yachid, also a minority view. But I try to be makbid. Why? Because it's true, you have two minority views, but you have the two gedolei hador for entirely different reasons saying this is something you should not be doing. So that's why what I do when this comes up, is I don't want to cause people inconvenience. So I do what's the Yerushalmi minhag of doing the ksuva under the chuppah. We wait to win the chuppah. We read the ksuva under the chuppah. We do the kinyan under the chuppah, and we sign under the chuppah. So it's all done on the same day. That was in Yerushalayim, they still do it that way. And it was an old machlokes amongst the Rishonim, when to do the ksuba. So to me, it's a win-win situation because I get covered by Rav Moshe and Shlomo Zalman. We have two new kibbutim under the chuppah. Two guys sign, they get called up. So you get another win-win. And it makes the wedding a little more interesting. So people have a little bit of buzz about the wedding. I did once one pushback from one of the Gedalia Poskim who criticized in advance. He said he held that it was a significant change of a minhag. In other words, he was saying the following: Hey, Yos, this was discussed in the almost 1,000 years ago, 800 years ago. It was a machloek between the Chachmei Ashkenaz, and the decision was we don't do the ksuv on the chuv, we do the ksuv by the chosin tish. So for me to decide I'm going to do it under the chuv, that's accurate because Rav Moshe writes that if you do something out of convenience, that's not changing a minute. We do so. In other words, the only reason that we're doing it now is that if we're not doing it because we've now gone through all this forum, we said, this is a better idea. We said, no, this way people don't have to sit around waiting. But that all is based on this idea that a pre-dated document, according to Tosfos, is nothing. It's not worth anything. According to Rashi, it's not a powerful document. Yaakov? Mechiras Chometz. Okay, that's a very good question. In other words, Mechiras Chometz, that question has also been raised. Right? In other words, that Mechiras Chometz, that you appoint the sale, but the sale actually takes place later on. Right. So there has been a suggestion that every person should only that all the appointments should take place mamash and erev Pesach. So when you have very small shuls, you can do it. But as shuls grew, it became impossible. But the reason why it's not such a big problem is because over here, what's happening is that you are appointing me today to take care of something a week from now. Right, so that the what happens between you and me is the appointment of agency, so that can be that can happen earlier, so that's why it's not considered to be an inappropriate move. The reason why it has been criticized is the following: let's say it's a week before Pesach, can you appoint me to sell chametz that you haven't bought yet? That's a big question, right? You can appoint me to sell chametz if you bought already. But you appoint me to sell chametz, you appoint me on Sunday. You buy something on Tuesday that you didn't know about on Sunday. So now when I sell on Friday, you have it. So that's the question in the appointment of agency. So we assume that is included, that the agency is established early, but I do have the full power of attorney. All right, that's the difference between power of attorney and shlichus. To appoint me as an agent, so I probably could not pick up agency if you can't do it yourself, and you can't sell what you don't have yet. Power of attorney means you're giving me rights to make decisions on your behalf. So that's how we justify. Yeah. David.
Is it possible to specify in the ksuba that the Kabbalah's kinyan is on such and such a date and the tradition and the ksuba is going to be on
and a different date? So practically speaking, David asked, can we design a ksuba which includes that the kinyan is done on Monday and the ksuba and the wedding takes place on Tuesday. So it probably can be done. And we would specify, right, that could be done. Why? Because we'd be saying that it becomes effective at night on Tuesday. And we're specifying, don't think that there's a sheker. So it can't be. The reason why it is practically not feasible is because the halachos, the laws of creating documents in halacha is very, very tight. Just like probably legal documents. If you make a misstep in the way that you phrase a document, probably you can end up being compromised legally. So the same thing is true in halacha. And since the halachos of running documents is so tight, so we use forms, basically, templates. So the answer, the template could be created. But it would mean Rabbanim sitting down and creating a template. It could be done. Yeah. But that's why it hasn't been done.
Another question. You mentioned before that it's relatively easy to do a title search if there's a shtar.
Yeah.
Where are the shtars kept if they're so accessible and easy to
keep? Right. So David is saying is why are we assuming that it's so easy to do a title document when the document is there? So the Rishonim explained that the reason why it was seen as easy to do the title search if there's a document, because they say not because of the storage of the document. There is a Gemara in Gittin that says that the documents were kept in central courthouses. And in fact, the English, the Aramaic word, which may be a Greek word, of erkos, courts are called erkos. The reason why, and documents were kept in the erkos. So the erkos were the repository of documents, hence the word archives. So that seems to be, the Gemara in Gittin seems to say that. However, when the Rishonim explained why we expect a person that was documented, apparently it's because that writing documents was always seen as a specialized skill, just like now. Now, so for example, let's say if you imagine, probably there are towns where there's like the town lawyer, the town attorney, right? There was like in the small towns, two attorneys or something. So apparently, if you had one attorney in the town and he was only added the document, so apparently it was an event. So people remembered that this guy borrowed money and they had to sign it. And so that's the way Chazal explained it, that documents in the time of Chazal were events. Yeah, correct. Right. Then we create a certain people were aware of it. Good. So the question was the tshuva that was raised. The question that was raised was what would happen if one would write a tshuva and use the dates of the king. In other words, now we never use, when we sign documents, it's as we say in the Ksuva, Leminyan Sha'anu, Libriya Sa'olam, Leminyan Sha'anu Moinen Kan. We go back to creation. There was a move amongst Rabbanim to say that since many Rabbanim don't believe that creation was Tov Shin Pei, hey, it's 5,781 years ago, that's not correct to say Leminyan Sha'anu Moinen Kan. The Big Bang was earlier. So I didn't think they're so serious. There were some rabbis who wanted to drop it and not have Libriyas Ha'olam, to have the minyan shonu kanim. But I think it is from the time of creation in accordance to the way that we count creation. So I think it works. So that doesn't bother me so much. But so our convention is we use from creation. We use Tav Shin Pei Aleph. So the tshuva is very amusing. How did this shala come up? Because there was a non-Jewish king who had a daughter who became a Geiris and married a Jew. All right? And the new son-in-law wanted to impress his father, the president. So he wanted to date the ksuva to the years that the years that the president, the king had been in power. All right? So if Jared Kushner wanted to do wanted to do this, then this would be this tshuva that we find from medieval times. So the question was raised, is this a good ksuva? Can we create our own dating system for a particular document? In other words, the point is, you see, Chazal wanted to have a convention. And the purpose of the convention was so that it would give the documents real teeth. Now I decide, I'm going to do my own thing. I'm going to date it on my own way. So from Zilberstein, who raises this, who quotes this, I'm not sure who had the original tshuva. The question was, when Chazal said we have a convention, did Chazal say, and a date that is doesn't follow the convention is not a valid document, because we're expecting somebody to know when this president lived and how many years? So now, how are we going to compare this document to the other documents that we're working with? So the person writing tshuva says, well, maybe we can figure it out. In other words, so it's not a different date. It's a remez. Now go into the history books and figure out. So it's not a date. It is a code. Can you write a date in code? That was the shaila. So obviously it didn't happen frequently enough, so we had to really be decided. But it does raise a question about our Gemara, because the question is, when Chazal established this principle, so did they now insist that this is the convention to be used? And any date other than convention would not be good. So when Klal Yisrael said, Aksuva is going to be dated from Bria Sa'olam, so now if a person will put the English date, would it be a good Aksuva or not? The answer is probably would be, because English date is very, very accessible. But let's say a person figured out his own remez, he figured out a gematria, and he gives his own code. And then he says, if you figure out this code, you'll know the date. Is that acceptable? Is that an acceptable document? So that's one of the questions that come up with Lamaisa from this Gemara. So we are on the top, at the very bottom of Beis Din Aleph, where the Gemara says, Omar Mar Melech Shomad Be'eser B'Tisha, a king that became king on the 29th of Adar, Kevin Shigi Echad B'Nisan, also Laishana. So then that year already counted. That was 1 year. One day on, teaches us the Nisan Rosh Hashanah Limlachim. So number one, we know top of Beis Medveis that Nisan is the end of year, being a year for non-Jewish kings. The Yom Echad B'Shana Chosh Hashana, and if you have one day in power, that will count as your first year. The Imlay Amad Ela B'Echad B'Nisan. But if you only became king on the first day of Nisan, you have a convention. You have to have an agreement. He said such a long march. He lived one day, tremendous things in one day. I was going to say that in one day a king can, the president can change the makeup of the Supreme Court. So I think there's a very strong Democrat influence in the shul, because the Zoom went down, so now it's back up. So we see how we know that the previous president, it was at the very end of his reign, he did something that was to the he let something pass. He didn't veto something in the Security Council. So that was, so Yoim Echad B'Shana Choshev Shana. The person in power, the person in power in one day can accomplish tremendous things. So that's why we say it does count. It does count. Gemara goes on to say this: the principle on which is all based is Shalom Malchus. We'll come to that in a moment. So Gemara says that Pshita. The Gemara says once you have a convention, so then all the details fall into place. Why do we have to explain all the details? Tzricha, we have to explain it. The imne ole me ador mahu de teima nimne le tartin shnin kamashmalot. What happens again? Contemporary idea. What happens if it was determined he'd be the king in Adar, but he only began to be the king in Nisan? In other words, he was voted in 2020, but the inauguration is 21. So which year counts as his first year? So the Gemara saying that the Gemara is pointing out is the convention is when he is established as king, not when he is determined that he will be king. Now this is of particular interest in halacha, because in halacha kings don't get elected. Kings usually sometimes if the successor is the son of the present king, he just slides in. He doesn't get even coronated. So what does it mean, nimno? What do you mean he gets, Jewish kings don't get appointed sometimes if the king doesn't have a natural successor, so then the Sanhedrin has to set to figure out who the next king is. So that can happen. It could be the Sanhedrin will decide who the king is in Adar, but until they organize the coronation, it could take a few days, so he may not be functioning as the king yet. So the Gemara says that the convention is not when the decision was made, but when the coronation takes place. Tana Rabba Mebraisa, Meis Ba'adar, Ba'omad Acher Tachta Ba'adar. What happens if, again, exploring the convention over here, what happens if the king died in Adar and his son took over in Adar? So can you have the same year counted twice? Can you double count? Right? That could also get confusing. Right? This is the last year of David HaMelech, and that same month is the first year of Shlomo HaMelech. Moinen shona lezeh v'lezeh. So halacha is, we actually do count both years to two different kings. So that the chiddush over here is that even we are not nervous about that measure of confusion. Meis ben Nisan va'omer acher tachtov ben Nisan. Let's say David HaMelech died in Nisan and Shlomo HaMelech becomes king in Nisan. Same thing. Shonu zeh v'shonu lezeh. So the last year of the king of David's reign is the first year, even though it happened in the same month. Meis. Right, and again, the chiddush over here is that here the convention could get confused. It could get confusing, because let's say I have a document that says this is taking place in the 40th year of David HaMelech, in the Nisan of the 40th year, and you have a document saying this happened in the Nisan of the first year of Shlomo HaMelech. So at first blush, to know, the servant going to have to know 30 years later, whenever this document comes to light, that David and Shlomo shared a month. So there is a chiddush over here, because we're trying to avoid confusion, and we're trying to avoid documents that could be predated and presented as being predated. So now there are situations where it won't be so clear. So the question is, so the Gemara is saying that we theoretically, what was our alternative? Yeah. And Beresh Chodesh. Yeah. So, but I guess the Gemara is saying we could have had a convention to say that we will only assign 1 month to one king, so that it'll become clear. This is David. Nisan is David HaMelech. All right. All documents the next 2 weeks either don't get done, or they all get postdated. We could have. It would be conceivable to try to override that confusion by saying that two days ago, Sunday. Sunday was the 30th day of Tishrei. It was also Rosh Chodesh Marcheshvan. So if a wedding that took place today on Monday is Yom Echad L'Chodesh Marcheshvan. Okay, it's very clear. The one that took place yesterday, so the convention is to write Yom Shloshim L'Chodesh Tishrei, Shehu Rosh Chodesh L'Marcheshvan. Right? Apparently, it could be confusing. If you just write Rosh Chodesh, so then you have to know whether it was 2 days or 1 day Rosh Chodesh. Are you ready Rosh Chodesh? Oh, this is your anniversary? Okay, you have to call Leah after Shir Hashem. And many, many happy returns. Hashem should always many, many years of good health in the middle of learning. And then she continues to learn. So I had a very humorous thing happen to me because when I was reciting Kiddushin, I wrote on the document, Yom Shloshim L'Chodesh Nisan. Shehu Rosh Chodesh. I forget what he wrote. Probably the year or something. So when I brought the Edom up, it was one of the Rabbanim read it, said, he wrote Nisan over here. When I write Nisan, because I was so nervous, pulled out the Nachla Shiva. I pulled out the index, so to speak, the digest for Rabbanim, how to do documents. So the example he gave of this situation was the 30th day of Nisan, probably Shur Rosh Chodesh Iyar. So I got so nervous, I ended up copying it exactly. It's like the kid who copies his friend's name on his test. So Baruch Hashem, I had two extra copies of Ksuvas. So I didn't. We did it before the wedding. But that was that's trying to catch these aberrations. So the Gemara is saying, even though this could become more confusing, nevertheless, this is the power of a convention that one then has to take into account the possibility that the last Nisan of David HaMelech is the first Nisan of Shlomo HaMelech. What's all this based on? So the Gemara says, all based on the din of Sholei Malchus. That's what Rashi pointed out. Mishum Sholei Malchus. What's Sholei Malchus? So the Gemara, we said the Pnei Yeshua last week, that it was convention to use the dates of the Jewish kings. So now when we fell under the rule of non-Jewish kings, if we would not now flip to use the Jewish kings as our connection to the non-Jewish population being offended by us and seeing us as being separate and distinct and not fully accepting of the authorities. There are two other situations in Halacha where Shalom Malchus plays that kind of a role. One is in the famous Kamsa Bar Kamsa that we learn in Tisha B'Av, that Bar Kamsa wanted to aggravate the Jewish people, so he convinced the emperor to send a korban, and then he put made a mum in the korban, made a blemish in the korban. So when they brought the korban to Yerushalayim, they said, we can't bring this as a korban. So the Gemara says, who was the Amora? Zechariah ben Avkulas. Right? He said we should, right. He said, don't bring it. Why? Yomru Bale Mumin Makrivin L'Mizbeach. So he had an animal to the Mumin. It was Apostle Carbon. So he didn't say, don't bring his Apostle Carbon. He says, don't bring it because it will give the impression that a Apostle Carbon can be brought. Why didn't he say, don't bring his Apostle Carbon? So the Magen Avraham says, Magen Avraham writes this in Hilchos Sukkos. He writes, it's just an add on Hilchos, he writes that you see from here that as far as the halacha is concerned, they were supposed to bring it. Mishum Sholem Malchus. Sholem Malchus overrides, accepting the authority of the king, overrides bringing Apostle Korban to Mizbeach. And the Gemara says that because of that error, right, because Rabbi Zachariah ben Avkulos decided not to, right? So there, that's when the king got that was brought up at the Churban, the last word of the Churban. Was that? Misha and Susa. Right. Because he said that if we can't, they said, why don't we kill, we'll kill Bar Kamsa, so no one's going to tell about this event. So the Gemara says that then people will get the conclusion that it's a Chiyuv of Misa. If you so, but the Magen, when we should not be accepting tzedakah from non-Jewish sources because it's embarrassing to Klal Yisrael. We should be taking care of our own poor. The Gemara says that Rav Amin Rava, they received significant gifts from a non-Jewish source, and they both said the right thing to do is to accept the money and then to give it out to non-Jewish poor. Why accept the money? Mishum Sholem Malchus. Because it's very offensive if we say that we will not take a gift from the non-Jewish government. But then also, you see that there was a violation of halacha. Mishum Sholem Malchus, in order to show that we accept the local authority, the local government, we are obligated to sometimes do things that are awesome. Had kerekach, bring them alamum l'mizbeach. And some Mefarshim point out the same thing is true about Sholem, about putting the dates. Because in a non-Jewish day, the Chassam service is a non-Jewish king and Kedas Moshe Yisrael. What are they doing in the same document? We mentioned Moshe Rabbeinu, we shouldn't be mentioning a non-Jewish king. The answer is Mishum Sholem Malchus. So what Sholem Malchus doesn't just mean we want to make him feel good. It means that Klal Yisrael understands the importance of being compliant, and not only being compliant, but of currying favor in local governments, currying favor with the local Malchus, ad kerekach, that we are willing to bring a mulam is we have to, ad kach, that we will override our hesitation to accept tzedakah, and ad kerekach, that we will include a non-Jewish king together with Moshe Rabbeinu in the document. But that's all Mishum Sholem Malchus. So that's the aside of this whole sugya. Mishum Sholem Malchus, we created the convention of dating to show that we are compliant to the local authorities. All right, so next week we'll go on to discuss some more about the succession of monarchy within Klal Yisrael.
No, it's fine. Thank you very much.